Fatima, where heaven and earth have met. Since the day our Blessed Mother visited her cousin Elizabeth, she has never stopped visiting her people and care for them in time of need, reminding them of the gospel of her son. This happened in Guadalupe, Mexico, and then in Lourdes, France. Let us now hear what was the purpose and message of her visitation in Fatima on every 13th of the month from May to October in 1917. Here now is the director of Radio Maria Canada, Father George Amaro.
Welcome, brothers and sisters, to another program about the apparitions of Our Lady in Fatima, Portugal. We are at the episode 48, and we have been dealing with these matters of God's intervention in the history of humanity. We have concluded that God indeed intervenes. He did so in Egypt. He did so in many times, in many situations with the people of Israel. And he did it for the rest of the world by being born in Bethlehem and lived among us for at least, traditionally, that's the age we give to Jesus, 33 years among us, and teaching us and showing us the way and being and role modeling for us what human life is all about. He was not just human, but he was God too. Although with us he lived as a human being, as St. Paul said, he humbled himself even to a servant and died on the cross. So he lived as a human being, not as God among us. And that's why so many did not believe him, although he said beautiful things, although he role model humanity for us, living as a fully human. And also he did great works of mercy, that was his miracles, towards those less fortunate. And even those fortunate that have asked him, that humbly have asked him, like Roman centurions and even foreigners that have asked him for his intervention and his signs, his miracles were somehow also intervention. We said that the faith asks for the intervention, that our faith, that the concept of faith sometimes goes against the laws of nature and makes things happen when within the laws of nature they would not just happen. So our faith can move mountains, and moving mountains, it's against the laws of nature. The mountains don't just move like that. But and we concluded about all the subject that God does intervene in the history of humanity, but is not an interventionist. And by an interventionist means that he does not intervene whenever we want him to intervene. He intervenes as he pleases, is in his own plan, in his own time, in his own logic. He knows when to intervene and when not to intervene. And we just have to trust him that when he does it for a purpose, and it's for always for our good. Because some interventions, maybe God would think that would not do us good, and so he does not intervene. He let things go in their course. Sometimes he does, sometimes he doesn't. There is no rules for that. It's not us that brush the Aladdin lamp and asks for him intervention, and he comes and intervenes. No, God is not under our command. We should be under the command of God. So he does not intervene whenever we want him to intervene, but he does intervene in the world when he thinks it is important and it is for our good and the good of humanity. Even if we don't see it that way. But that's the trust. That's the trust of God. As I usually say, refer to the way a little kid relates to his dad. The little kid asks for many things, but dad only gives the little kid the things that he sees that are adequate for his age and that are good for his life. And the little kid doesn't know that sometimes he asks for things that would not be good for him, but the father knows. So the same goes with us. We, many times, we don't know what we are asking. Like Jesus said to these two apostles that wanted to sit at the right and at the left, he said, "You don't know what you are asking," Jesus told them. But so same thing happens to us. We don't know what we ask. So the intervention, which is when God gives us what we need, it's according to what he thinks that we need, not according to what we think that we need. Having said this, I just wanted to, before I go into the matter that is how Fatima was intervention, was God's intervention in the history of humankind in the 20th century, throughout the 20th century. Before I go into that, I want to give you another image of Mary. Because the image of Mary that I'm going to give you is it's not known, and really, since the age of the seminary, 10 years of age, I've listened to so many preaching about anything, and I've never heard what I'm going to tell you. Never heard preaching about a new face of Mary. That I believe it is there, although nobody speaks about it. But Mary is not just what we think she is. There is a face that is not revealed, but it is there. I wonder why nobody picks it up and also makes reflections and preachings about it. It's the interventionist Mary. It's the Mary that intervenes through all the ages. The depictions of Mary in paintings and sculptures have gotten us used to a stereotyped image of her as the humble servant of Zion, passive, with a calm and serene expression, who instead of speaking openly to express her thoughts and feelings, ponders them in her heart. We do not deny that this is all truth, but it is, however, only one facet of her personality. Well, of what I said, being passive, that's not true at all, because we saw her being active in the wedding of Cana. If she was passive, even if she noticed that there is no wine, she would keep it quiet. She would not say anything. She would not do anything. But she's not passive. Mary is not passive. It's always proactive. But we don't really stress this proactivity of Mary. And we stress more her calm, serene expression, even sad expression. And about this sad expression, I want to tell you a joke about John Paul II and Mary. You know that John Paul II was very much in love with our Blessed Mother, and even his coat of arms reveals it. The is blue. His coat of arms is simple blue, sky blue, celestial blue, and the motto, his motto is Totus Tuus. It means all yours, Mary. So he's devoted to Mary. And the joke says that John Paul II had an enigma whilst he lived, and that after that he was thinking of asking our Blessed Mother this question that had always been in his mind. And the question, indeed, when he died and he went to paradise and he met our Blessed Mother, and though I have a question for you, he said, why in all the pictures, in all the paintings, in all the representations, drawings and sculptures that I have seen all my life of you, Blessed Mother, you are always sad. Why are you always sad? Our Lady, as soon as she heard that, she kind of, she asked John Paul to a private place because she could not say that aloud, so to say that the joke goes. And she said, you know, John Paul, in a small voice, when I got pregnant, I wanted to have a girl. I wanted to have a girl. Okay, so you cannot say that aloud. It's a nice joke for me. I don't think anybody should be scandalized by it. And it also says that we are equal, men and women, and that the Son of God, you know, John Paul I said that God is mother and father, so he's also a mother. So the Son of God, being born in as a male, it's circumstantial. It's circumstantial. That means if he was to be born in a matriarchal society where the women have the power, then probably he would be born as a woman. Because, as a matter of fact, as you heard me saying, the first image that humans got of God, the first image, primitive humans, the first the way they conceptualized God, it was as a woman, not as a man, as a big, big, big mother. As a matter of fact, Mother Nature, you never say Father Nature, you say Mother Nature. Why? And in all languages you say Mother Nature, because mother is fertile, because mother is life. And primitive humans, they didn't know where kids came from. Of course they had the sexual intercourse and or the conjugal act, if you prefer, but there was a long time between the action and the consequence, 9 months. And so they could not match one thing with the other. And so they regarded women highly, highly, because they were the future of the species. They see that everybody dies and they are the ones who continue humanity. So, and the first... there were more goddesses than gods in the beginning, because the gods that the Israelites always fight, they are all female gods. The gods of Canaan, they are gods of fertility. The first image of gods that were they done in clay, they were women. With fertile women represented, you know, with their feminine attributes, even huge, because representing fertility. So so it's, for me, it's circumstantial that the Son of God could have been a woman if he was to be born in a matriarchal society, but he was to be born in a patriarchal society, and society is still very much patriarchal. So that's why he was born as male, representing God as male, and our Blessed Mother represents God as so Jesus represents God as Father and male, and our Blessed Mother represents God as Mother and female. So I do not know what reason that over the centuries and the other aspect of Mary was never painted or never sculptured. The woman of the Magnificat. What I'm going to tell you is precisely the woman of the Magnificat. I'm going to read the whole Magnificat, but I'm going to comment the verses 51, 52, and 53, where we see that other face of Mary, a very uncommon face of Mary that I don't know why we haven't stressed as much as we have stressed the other. Maybe the reason is because we are indeed a patriarchal society, and revolutionary women, we probably don't like them. We are afraid of them. But they were revolutionary women throughout the history. And one of them, and the main one, probably was our Blessed Mother. Welcome back, brothers and sisters, and we were saying about this different image of our Blessed Mother that belongs to her too. It's like we have two faces, And one, the right face, you probably know it. It's the one that we have always described, and that that being a bit a woman, a submissive woman. But I want you to, I want to describe you a more proactive and less and not at all submissive woman. So Mary responded to what Elizabeth told her, happy are you because you believed. And so she responded with her Magnificat, which is a beautiful song. Parts of it were taken from the Old Testament, so she knew the Old Testament, and so and she picked up parts of it for her Magnificat. And the Magnificat is her manifestation. It's the manifestation, is the explosion and the exposition, her testimony of how God has worked wonders in her life. And that's her mission. You see, mission, most mission is not doctrine. It's not going to people and tell them about Jesus and tell them about Jesus' miracles and tell them about Jesus' doctrine. That is also mission, but I would say that is secondary, or is the second thing that you should do in your, as your mission work. The first thing, the very first one, is to give witness to how Jesus has acted on your life, is to give witness of your experience of God. And that's what our Blessed Mother is giving witness to Elizabeth about the Annunciation and how she has experienced God in her life. And that's the most important thing. And what is the sort of experience that, what do you experience in your life in as far as God's experience? You experience salvation. Because remember, Mary needed to be saved too. Mary is a human being, was born out of a sexual intercourse like you and me, of the conjugal act between Joachim and Anna. So not she's not born of the Holy Spirit, as I have seen some stupid writings in a book. That's not true. So she is fully human. The only difference between her birth or her conception and our conception is that our conception is a sinful conception. Not is not sinful, the sexual act. It's sinful because the sin of Adam and Eve passes, that goes from generation to generation like a genetic disease. It also reaches us. But for a special privilege, God stopped it in Mary. And so she was conceived by, like anybody is conceived, only the action of God was in the act of conception, that the sin of Adam and Eve did not pass on to her. So her conception was immaculate. But she is also the result of a conjugal act, like you and me and everybody. It's only, and the conception happens roughly 1 hour after the conjugal act. That's the time that the spermatozoon travels towards the egg. And so when it meets the egg, when the spermatozoon meets the egg, that's the time of conception. And there, God acts, so that the sin of Adam and Eve would not pass on to Mary, because if it passed on to Mary, it would pass it on to Jesus. And Jesus is a human being, is a fully human being, but he is according to the human beings that God created, not according to the human beings that we have ruined with the original sin. So Mary gives witness to how she was saved by God, and gives witness how God entered their life and how she has experienced God. And so mission is precisely that, is to give witness to God in our lives. I compare it many times with this tea that somebody takes, special, a plant tree, a plant tea, and then it cures him or her of a disease, and then this person announces it to other people. Look, take this plant tree, this herbal tea, that it will cure you because it has cured me. And so the other person believes and is going to try. Same thing is mission. The person that hears our testimony of how God has worked wonders in our lives, the person that hears believes, and then that person welcomes Jesus into his or her life, and probably she will have, and certainly will have, the same experience as we had. So the Magnificat is that, mostly. But let us read it, especially those three verses that I've told you. My soul praises the Lord. Oh, how my spirit rejoices in God my Savior. For he took notice of his lowly servant girl. And from now on, all generations will call me blessed. So the humble are exalted, as Jesus says in the Gospel. The humble are exalted and the proud are humbled. That's how it is, and that's how it happened with Mary. Mary was very humble, she was very low, and it was God that exalted her. For the Mighty One is holy, and he was done great things for me. Yeah, we have to acknowledge, we many times Catholics, we don't acknowledge much all the graces that we receive. We don't count our graces, and we only see what we don't have, and we don't see what we have, and thank God for it. So, but in that sense, Mary is not Catholic, because Mary is more like the Protestants do. They give more thanks. If I would compare a Protestant with a Catholic, I would say that Catholics ask more than they give thanks. And the Protestants, they give thanks more than they ask. Both things are important. Also, if you are too proud, you stop asking, then it's not a good attitude towards God, because we always need him. But anyway, both things, count your blessings, that's a Protestant expression. And we Catholics many times don't count our blessings. But our Blessed Mother, yes, she counts the blessings, because the Mighty One, the Holy One, has done great things for me. So she acknowledges all the blessings that she have received from God. He shows mercy from generation to generation to all who fear him. Remember, this fear is an act of love to all those who love him. Now the verse 50 and 52 and 53 comes. His mighty arm has done tremendous things. He has scattered the proud and haughty ones. He has brought down princes from their thrones and exalted the humble. He has filled the hungry with good things and sent the rich away with empty hands. So these three verses is the ones that I'm telling you that make up for the other face of Mary, the revolutionary woman, the proactive Mary. When I recite these verses, the image that comes to my mind is more like that one of the legendary Joan of Arc of the 100 Years' War between France and England. There was this in the Middle Ages, this 100-year war, it took 100 years to finish, and France prevailed. He won the war, and it was attributed, this victory, this lasting victory, is attributed to Joan of Arc. Joan of Arc was the one that managed the victory for France. And Joan of Arc is Saint Joan of Arc. Although we know that then the Inquisition was the Catholic Church, what was the English Catholic Church at that time? England was still Catholic. The English Catholic Church forced somehow the Inquisition to kill her. But very soon after killing her, the Inquisition and the Church recognized that it was a big mistake. She was not a witch, Joan of Arc. She was a very beautiful woman and beautiful saint, pure woman that dedicated her life for the Church and their country, France. And she was going in front of the armies. This is a revolutionary woman. So when I think of this revolutionary face of Mary, I think of this Joan of Arc. And interestingly enough, I can think of other women. Teresa of Calcutta. I can think of Teresa of Avila. And I can think of Catherine of Siena. These are big revolutionary women in the Church. And another French woman comes to my mind. This French woman doesn't have a name, but you all remember that painting, that French woman with bare chest, naked chest, and with the flag of France and marching in front of the troops against the Bastille. In the French Revolution that overthrew monarchy and created the first republic was the Roman Republic in the Roman times, but the restoration of the republic against monarchy. And this French woman, there, she doesn't have a name, but you see the energy, you see the movement of her body, and going in front of the troops and wanting change in society, wanting the end of this dictatorship that was the absolute monarchy in France. The king, he proclaimed himself as the sun, like the Egyptians, the sun king. And so it was overthrowing this monarchy. I admit to exaggeration mainly in the violent aspect implicit in these images of my fantasy, but there is also exaggeration in the stereotype one, insofar as the truth is more likely to blend of these two images. In other words, Mary is who is clearly not aggressive, but who is much more proactive than passive, and not a submissive woman, is a modern woman, and she really can model for women of nowadays. And as a matter of fact, she is mentioned in the Quran as by her name, because the Quran, when mentioned, the sacred book of the Muslims, when mentioning women, they mention the function of those women. He never say Sarah. They mention the wife of Abraham. They never say Rebecca. They mention the wife of Isaac. Only our Blessed Mother, Mary, comes with her name, and there is a sutra that is a chapter dedicated to her. So Mary is the new woman, and Mary is the woman that all women should look up and try to imitate. The apparition of Our Lady in Fatima being the most political of all Marian apparitions, as Bob says, that even to crisscross its authenticity, there was a need to check it against some political manifestation in the biblical figure of Mary. In so doing, from the Magnificat, we can conclude that Fatima was not the first time Mary got involved into politics. Thus, the message of Fatima is truly revolutionary in a Magnificat style and unravels for us the other face of Mary, that of the social-political intervention as a proclamation of the kingdom that her son came to bring to the world. In Fatima, Mary, the mother of the Church, the mother of life, visits her children with a message of life and peace for a world immersed in war and genocidal and ideological death. She came to announce that God is alive, well, to all those like Nietzsche who proclaimed him dead. In historical and in the ideologic materialism, as well as a militant atheism which had spread from Russia to the rest of the world. In Fatima, Mary visits her people as she had once visited her cousin Elizabeth. She asks the little shepherds to offer themselves and to participate with God in a plan of salvation for a world that has fallen victim to itself. A world that is encased in the ideologies of rationalism, sadistic nihilism, which has brought on the horrors of war and the cruelty of torture and irrationalism of the 20th century, ethnic and religious persecutions and cleansings. And by way of hope, she came to console her children in their bitter hours, and to give them the assurance that in the end their immaculate heart would triumph. I have set before you today life and prosperity, death and adversity. Like Moses, Mary in Fatima places side by side the hope and the threat, the salvation and the destruction, the promise and the warning, the grace and the judgment, and also like Moses, she urges us to choose goodness in the way of the gospel and in order to get out of the horrors into which the world has fallen and the world would be falling later on in the Second World War. So these brothers and sisters, is Fatima's intervention into the history. And so in the next episode, we go more clearly and more concretely into what this intervention was.
You have been listening to Fatima, Where Heaven and Earth Have Met, with Father George Amaro. Thank you for joining us today, and we pray that this program is an encouragement to you. Please join us here on Radio Maria Canada, where Father George Amaro will continue his teaching about Our Blessed Mother and the significance of Fatima.